You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day everybody, welcome back to the ESPN Footy Podcast for another season. Season 6, would you believe it? My name is Matt Walsh, I'm joined by Jake Michaels and Champion Darters Christian Jolly. Gents, 6 years?
It feels like it can't be.
I think I say that every year. Fourth year or the fifth year, but the sixth year.
Six years feels like, well, that's a long time.
What were you doing 6 years ago?
Well, starting this, I guess.
Well, that was the obvious answer, but I was kind of more alluding to, how old you have been? 25, 26?
20, yeah, nearly 26.
Young and bright-eyed and in the caper of journalism and watching footy and...
Still doing the same, I think. Maybe not so bright-eyed anymore, but...
A bit more bleary-eyed.
It's been... what a change. I mean, when you consider this new studio that we're in today, go right back to the first one we were in, the makeshift cupboard, basically. We had to dust that down and get all that ready for episode one all those years ago with us three and Neil as well. So, it has come a long way. A lot of episodes, a lot of fun.
Hasn't it ever? Hey, Christian, how's Champion Data come along in the last 6 years? I guess kind of throwing back to, what was that, 2017? My maths isn't very good. But 6 years, a lot can change, I guess, in the statistical landscape. Can you kind of remember back to when we first started the podcast and what was happening that was new and what, I guess, now is just sort of commonplace in the industry?
Yeah, I think pressure rating was probably the main one. It had probably been done for about 3 or 4 years, but only live for probably 2. So that was still in its infancy back then. But now we'll need to, I think we need to buck some trends here on this podcast, though, because the studies all tell you that you usually peak, in AFL, you usually peak at your sixth year, and that's sort of, that's the zenith that you reach, and you'll
either... Well, we still need to do our 100th episode giveaway.
200th episode giveaway.
We'll be close to 200. I know
veterans by that point, I think is what they describe them when you hit 200 games in footy. No, don't say that, because we do have the new digs, as we've kind of said.
Exactly, it can only get better.
The studio, new intro, flash new logo as well. Thanks to the team over at Disney as well for that. So, look, plenty to get to. We're going to talk footy again all year, which is great. We've got some exciting announcements later on as well. But there's a heap to get to, including what is new for Champion Data this season in 2024. We're going to talk the best 50 players coming into the season, Jake, which is your little passion project that you've been doing for a few years now. So not the
tough
most...
gig.
Some robust feedback, shall we say.
The hardest thing I do all year, I must say. But we'll get into that a little later.
We'll go on the record. We'll be talking about our risers, our sliders, our flag winner, our wooden spoon, all that kind of stuff, and our big calls for the season as well, among a heap of stuff.
You had a big call this year? That was something from year one, I reckon. Your big call. Your big
Gold Coast will win
call.
A game. Wasn't that it?
I was right.
If he's saying we've peaked at year six, I think year one was kind of the slow start. We were the rookie that was trying to get on the park.
That's it.
No, but we do have plenty to talk about, so we might as well get cracking straight away. Christian, there is something I want to ask you off the top, and it's the practice games that have been sanctioned by the... Well, they haven't been really sanctioned by the AFL, but the practice games... You guys haven't been keeping stats for those, because I logged on trying to find who'd played well and who'd done bits and pieces in the pracky scratch games on the weekend and couldn't find anything.
Yeah, no stats covered for those ones. So they're, again, it's just the category they fall into. And I think I noticed it watching it on Fox and KO as well. They were match simulations. So Champion Data weren't sort of engaged to provide a service for that. But then I spoke to sort of management Champion Data, and it was the AFL had said, those games were basically glorified training sessions. So the AFL provided the umpires, and that was all. So the timekeepers, the interchange stewards, the venues, all that sort of stuff had to be sourced by the clubs. So they're not sort of just not official on the fixtures. So I think because they end up on TV and everyone's sort of watching them.
I think people assume that the stats would
sort of fit in. But I think that's the AFL were quite, you know, again, when you read the fixture, they're quite clear that week one was match sim. Week two, starting tonight, is actually the actual preseason where, you know, everything ramps up and everything goes, you know, we capture as much as we do starting tonight as we do during the home and away season. But yeah, the first week was just match sim games that again, it's just, yeah, as I said, it's more directed from the AFL. Is they're not official games?
Do you get
not...
trigger happy? Like, are you wanting to do the stats for these kind of things?
Or a little bit. We did them. We have done them before, and they can be hard. I mean, and because they are training games, teams will say that they're going to use 25 players and five on the bench, but they might just put 10 on the bench for one of the quarters because people are getting a bit tired. And it's sort of very hard to sort of, when they start throwing in VFL players in the fifth quarter, if you like, in the sixth quarter. So, I mean, that's you love to get all the data you can, but then again, a lot of those times we're covering it and we're sort of saying, well, you can't compare game A to game B. So they're very much, you get the stats for that one game and then you throw it out because that game was obviously 30 minutes longer than the other one that was played at the same time, et cetera, et cetera. So,
last question on this. As a stats man, the seven quarters must drive you nuts.
Seven sevenths. Yeah, exactly. That's why they've got periods in US sports. It's the sixth period and the seventh period. So.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, speaking of Jamie Dutt, I guess sort of staying on that mindset, how has your off-season been? Obviously now these days you're doing a lot more than just footy and there is a bit more to sort of occupy the offices during the, you know, quote-unquote off-season. What's been happening?
Yeah, well, again, that's probably one of the biggest changes. 6 years ago, probably our off-season was produced doing the prospectus, which was a publication we did for, I think, made 16 years worth or so, but that's all sort of fallen by the wayside.
No chance of a comeback?
Definitely not in a print format. I mean, it just, wasn't doable in terms of falling into place. But yeah, like, in the last 6 years, I mean, you know, we picked up horse racing and tennis, and I do a little bit of the US lacrosse, the NLL. That's the outdoor lacrosse.
The NLL.
The netball and things like that. So yeah, plenty of sports going on in the Champion Data's four walls between, you know, October to round one AFL season. It's sport pumping out. But yeah, now I've been watching my Saskatchewan Rush go well in the NLL, but got done 19-6 yesterday. So yeah, not so happy about that one.
I'll have to Google that one later. Fair enough. Well, hopefully that doesn't mean that you are neglecting footy during the off season, because I guess fans, clubs, the media, we kind of all want to see strides forward in this space. New stats come out or you know, twists on old stats or stuff like that. Have you been working on bits and pieces?
Definitely. I mean, football's still our number one and our core sport, and that's, you know, we're always challenging ourselves within the four walls again of making sure that AFL stays as our primary focus of the coming. It is our biggest sport and it's sort of our number one client. So yeah, still been tinkering away with the stats, and probably where we're sort of getting to now, it's rather than trying to capture, you know, a lot of the stats we click buttons for and actually capture as they happen, now it's about sort of drawing in what we've already captured and using the GPS and positional data sort of, you know, in more harmony in such. So knowing exactly when a team goes inside 50, how many players are actually standing inside the forward 50 or inside 30 metres from goal. Being able to get all of that from the time sync and the GPS data is probably what we've most been playing around with during the off season.
And so I guess that means that you can start to look at twists on stats where it's, you know, and the one that you've got in front of us here is called the 100X rating, which is basically... it takes into account every position and the expected ratings per 100 minutes played in that position. So if you're, for instance, Jack Sinclair and you're playing in the back line, but then when you float forward, sort of your expected ratings points per 100 minutes in each position. And if you're above average, or if you're doing better than the average, or if you're doing worse than the average. And that's kind of something that's new this year as well.
Yeah, again, it's probably separate to the GPS. So that's, you know, looking at, again, with the 666 rules, made it much easier for us to capture who's actually playing what position across the game. Obviously, when general play breaks out, you're sort of tracking who's pushing forward or pushing back to make those changes. But yeah, in the last 3 or 4 years, teams have really returned back to that defined 666 position rule. So again, a lot of our, you know, we've spoken about ratings and rankings and trying to boil everything down to one number on this podcast plenty of times before. And it's probably the 100X ratings is something that it started to creep out a little bit in the second half of last year. Some people might have heard it, but you'll probably start hearing it a lot more in the media landscape this year. And it's just taking rating points to another level. So we already talk about rating points. We know who averages the most rating points across the game, and they're always going to be midfielders.
Yep.
So actually having a look at and breaking down and say, and again, use Jack Sinclair as a great example. Looking at Jack Sinclair and going, hey, as a general defender, he outrates everyone by 5 rating points per game because of the time he gets to spend in the middle compared to someone who's just playing, you know, raw, like someone like Christian Salem or something, who's just playing halfback and never getting centre bounces. So all we're able to do is actually look at Jack Sinclair and go, well, you'd expect him to actually get more with the time he's spending in the midfield. So that's where the 100X comes in. It looks at, if you spent 50 minutes as a midfielder, you should be getting half as much as a midfielder averages per 100 minutes.
Yes.
So again, it's looking at Sinclair and going, rather than him getting 10 rating points across the game, he got 8 rating points in his 50 minutes as a defender and his 16 rating points as a midfielder. which means he was either, you know, X above for a defender in that 50 minutes and X above for a forward, so for a midfielder. So again, that is really looking at game situational stuff. So again, looking at the GPS stuff and talking about the inside 50, you know, talking about at a stoppage, where is everyone standing and what type of thing.
Okay.
And it, when we go inside 50, how many numbers are in there? This is probably more looking at, okay, when a player is playing in a certain position, how much output do we get personally from him? But also, too, the next step we're going to go with this is look at how your team actually functions when you're playing in that position. So Petrarca, when he plays forward, what is Melbourne's clearance differential exactly when he's playing as a forward? What is Melbourne's score per inside 50 rate when Petrarca's inside 50? So they're the things we're starting to hopefully sort of move towards, where we can actually break down the game and say, okay, when... rather than how many times did something happen, it's more about when did something happen.
I mean, all data is important, and the clubs want all of this stuff. But I imagine something like this would be super important to have, because Petrarca is a perfect example, and we spoke about it quite a few times last year. He's so good in the midfield, and then he goes forward, and he can do it better than anybody else, as the numbers will suggest. So. Where do you deploy him and for how long? And that's the kind of question that all these clubs are asking.
Give us Petrarca's stats here. So I'm looking at this in front of me here, and you've got, for these are last year's numbers, so obviously not including the scratch matches that we've just had. But you know, Christian Petrarca is a midfield. He is 3.32 ratings points per 100 minutes above the expected average.
Yeah.
When he goes forward, that's 7.01 ratings points above the expected average per 100 minutes.
So that shows that he's... well, you know how good he is as a midfielder, but he's twice as good as a forward compared.
Correct, yeah. So that plus 3.3 doesn't sound like a big number and a big sexy number, but plus
3.3
would put him in the top 10 or 15 performing midfielders. When he's in there per 100 minutes, he's performing 3 points better than anyone else. But then he almost gets double as good as a forward, which we haven't seen him spend as much minutes. But again, this was all cut to minimum of 300 minutes as
a
forward last year.
So you said it wasn't specifically tied to the GPS data, but then how do you differentiate time in the midfield versus...
Yep, so it's all tracked by, with our matchups. And, you know, I could have sat here and in 2018, 2019, and we would have said matchups was on its on its deathbed. There was just rolling mauls. Everyone was, you know, after a goal, you would never have six people standing in the forward 50. You'd have three defenders. You'd have four wingers. And it was getting a little bit, you know, we were still trying to match up who was on who. You want to know, again, Finn McGuinness tagged Nick Dacos last year. Had he done that 4 years ago, we would have tracked that quite heavily. But it was getting more of, who is your defender in this game? Well, they've got nine of them. So the 666 is really brought back. Now you really need to define, okay, Bailey Smith, you're going to know when he's playing forward or midfield, because we can't sort of hide him on the wing and sort of have three wingers and you don't know which one's going to push forward. You actually have to start with your forwards up forward and your wingers on the wing and your defenders in the
front. I am still a little bit sceptical about all this. Remember our discussion late last year about Dustin Martin? I reckon we had this discussion on the podcast about where he was playing. And everyone was saying, oh, he's got to be an All-Australian... half forward. The numbers throughout the year, or the tracking would say he played the majority of the year as a half forward. The end of the year, the last two games, my eye was telling me it was 80% of the midfield that he was playing. But it doesn't back that up. So if you're starting a centre bounce at half forward, and then you run into the play and you're in amongst the ball in the midfield for 10 minutes.
As I said,
you're still being tracked as a forward, right?
As I said, you've got to switch with someone.
So how does
if there's four midfielders and Dusty, exactly that, we have to make the assumption. If there's four midfielders that we've set for Richmond, and they are Taranto, Prestia, Jack Graham, and whoever else is in there, and Dustin Martin rolls up there, and all of those midfielders are still around that area, then Dustin Martin stays as a forward. He's just playing, as I said,
become another midfielder.
No, because teams are sending their forwards up. They're not saying, all right, let's play with six midfielders out. They're telling Dustin Martin, you're the forward, you go up to the stoppage.
Yeah.
But when the ball goes forward from the stoppage, you're the one responding. Like, it's not Jack Graham or Dion Presti I'm worried about getting forward. You're the one that needs to be in the forward line. So it is. It's based on there's 18 positions on the ground, or, you know, 20 if you look at, we got loose men and things like that. But it is. It's a one-for-one swap. If Dustin Martin goes and starts following the play around the ball, but the other four midfielders are there, yes, he'll stay as a general.
Because you can look at a heat map of Dustin Martin at the end of a game, and it can look like a heat map of Sam Walsh. It looks like he's just playing all over the ground in the midfield.
But if he starts as a half forward for a lot of those centre bounces,
with a general defender on him,
reset. You
he'll be almost exclusively
him.
As a forward.
So flip it around, and so let's use Jack Sinclair as the same example again. if he runs in off the from the 50 in defence, and then the ball goes into St Kilda's forward line, and he pushes up,
yep.
and he gets a quick kick comes out of the St Kilda forward line, and he picks up the ball at the wing, and he's getting these disposals very much in the middle of the ground. Does that still count as time as a defender?
Yep. Yep. So it's still where he's playing in terms of the set. There's still 18 people out on the field, and he still has his position on the field relative to everyone else that
so
he's playing with.
So it kind of moves with the ball.
Correct, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Ross Lyon would not want to end up with 10 midfielders out there. He'll need to still know, okay, who are our six defenders, you know, who's behind the ball, yep. blah, blah. So, again, Jack Sinclair would be one that we would watch, and we'd again, the guys that are tracking matchups are just, they're not watching the ball. They're just watching where everyone's running.
Mm.
They'll understand that Jack Sinclair in the first quarter, when he was general defender, he was 5 minutes behind. 5 metres behind the stoppage. Now he's under the ruckman's nose and player X is 5 minutes. Let's make the switch.
Yep.
We can clearly see. So they're That's not just watching where the ball's going and going, oh, he's on the wing. They're actually, as I said, they're actually looking at a puzzle, an 18-piece puzzle, and there's 18 players that need to fit in that puzzle. To move one piece, you need to replace it with another piece.
Has this answered your question a little bit?
It's answered it in the sense that I understand how it works, but I also still think there's part of it which you can say, and Martin was the example last year, but there are others, and there'll be more that become apparent.
Well, it won't be perfect, is what you're saying.
Where it won't be perfect, where people will think, oh, but because you can look at the pure numbers and you say, well, Martin as a forward does this, this, and this, and this. Yeah, but he is around the ball a lot more than Charlie Cameron as a forward. So the numbers are going to be a bit skewed in favour. He's going to have more.
But that's where, that's where we're looking at roles. So you do have the high. Charlie Cameron is not a high half forward, whereas Dustin Martin is. So again, a general defender. We're talking about Jack Sinclair, and if we want to talk about maybe someone like, I don't know, Connor Buderick or Brody Kemp, their jobs are completely different.
They're not going to be.
They're not supposed to have the same stats. Yeah. So again, I get what you're
saying.
There'll
be a bit of grey area for these guys.
I still would argue back to you that it's still a forward role that Dustin Martin's performing. No matter where he's doing that on the field, he's still playing as Richmond, one of Richmond's forward lines.
But I think it's a clear distinction to note that if he is starting as a half forward or in the goal square and he rolls all the way up and gets a handball receive in the back pocket, he's still as a forward. It's not you're up in the back half. You're a defender at that point.
Yeah. This is a spicy start to season six of the podcast.
It's interesting how it's done. That's why
we sit here and we present one number. So I'm presenting 100x and matchup.
Yeah.
What you're talking about, we'd also got where does Dusty Martin win the ball? So we can compare his percentage one in the defensive 50 or the defensive half to Charlie Cameron's, and we can get more sense of, pull up this number. Why is Dusty such a good midfielder? Such a good forward.
Well,
there you go. You tripped me up. But why is he such a good forward? And it would be things like that. Yes. Oh, he's getting more ball in the back half. Yeah. He's doing this, he's doing that. But again, and again, almost thank our lucky stars, we've got the 6-6-6 to fall back on that. After he does perform all that, we watch him and he's like, oh, he's gone back to the forward line.
Before we move on from this is a really interesting discussion, and I'm sure especially if you, with your ears within the four walls, think that this is going to be a more prominent stat as the season goes on, we should come back to this a few times.
I think we will. I think absolutely.
But a couple of notable stats, I guess, from last year, when you look at players that, perhaps have a primary position X, and then go to secondary position Y and have either done really well in the secondary position or not as well. Is there any numbers, names that jump out at you?
Yeah, as I said, so you can roll it up and I'll talk about the top five soon. So you can roll it up to one number and sort of say player X is plus 7 points above his expected ratings
overall,
based on where he's playing.
Right, yes.
But what it's also good for is those ones that you're always throwing up of where, and Petrarca might be one, where is this guy better at when he actually plays? Where is he performing better?
But just to stop you there, but if Simon Goodwin said, right, Christian, we want you to play permanent forward all year. If they did that, we'd all be calling him nuts, wouldn't we?
Well, maybe it's the impact that he has, the short bursts.
But these numbers say that in that position, he's performing twice as good
Is him getting the clearances or helping get the clearances for Melbourne and then shifting forward and playing a forward role? If you take him out,
isn't it factoring all of that into that equation?
What do you mean factoring?
So I'm saying if Petrarca's, crucial to the clearance that the Ds get out of the centre, then he rolls forward at the stoppage and plays as a small forward and is underneath the nose of the ruck or whatever it might be, and he kicks the goal.
But I don't think he can.
Does he get that goal if he's not in the middle?
I don't think he can go from. You can't just interchange back and forth like that.
Well, no, clearly not. But I'm sort of saying when that role is like. He's obviously, it's kind of hard to explain, but
as I said, and Petrarca is probably the hardest one for us to talk about, because as I said, that plus 3.3 as a midfielder, he's a gun midfielder, and his minutes, being quite low, it's been a small sample as a forward. As I said, it's been over 300 minutes, so it's a decent sample, is plus 7. So it's like, well, he's a gun forward, but again, plus three, where does he rate in Melbourne's midfield? He's probably plus 2 points better than anyone else. You know, Jack Vardy might be plus one as a midfielder. So it's like, well, he's still clearly our best midfielder. And, and it all goes back to exactly why we sort of talk about 100x. Because when I first looked at ratings, it's like, well, ratings is another number. Brownlow, rankings, everything else, it's a midfielder's. It's a midfielder's number and it's a midfielder's award and things like that. So midfielders are always going to get more opportunity to get higher scores. This actually looks like, okay, when he goes as a forward, he's actually still getting, as I said, the output that Petrarca does is seven times, you know, 7 points higher than any other forward in his time down there.
All right, so let's look at some players that I guess, not necessarily saying underperform in their primary position, but actually do better in the secondary position. There's some interesting names here, and I'll kick it off, I guess. So Sam Doherty, his primary position in 2023 was actually in the midfield.
So this is based on majority of minutes, so where you played your most
minutes. Most minutes. And so his rating, or his rating points, expected rating points per 100 minutes was minus 3.69 per 100 minutes as a midfielder.
As a centre bounce midfielder.
And it jumped up to plus 1.22 as a wing, so on the outside, for a difference of 4.9. So this is suggesting that Doherty is more damaging and should be playing wing permanently.
Yeah, so that was the biggest change between someone who'd played 300 minutes in at least two positions is Doherty's secondary position wing, which I think was about... It's only about 30 or 25% of his overall time. He was actually at plus 1.22 rating points, what he was producing on the wing. But below it, below the average as a midfielder, which is probably makes sense of if you just look at Sam Doherty and where you think he would be suited. He is probably suited to the outside and sort of that good ball use and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it would have been, at times where Cripps and Walsh and earlier in the season where he had to go into the midfield. I think there was a game where he was one of the most experienced midfielders in there because Chera, Cripps and Walsh were all out. So it was probably forced him to play out of position. But again, this is something where you can look at and say, well, we had to play him...
At least 300 minutes as well.
Exactly,
though, as well.
On the mid and the wing. When you're coming down to 2024 preseason, you say, well, we probably should be looking at pushing Doherty more to the wing and trying to find someone else to be that backup midfield. Another one that sort of went from, you know, the inside to the outside is Josh Kelly, who's still good as a centre-bounce midfield. So... plus 1.64 rating points higher per 100 minutes as a midfielder. But when he's moved out to the wing, six rating points higher. So again, almost up there with Petrarca as a forward type levels, where he's just, the ability to sort of be able to put him on a wing. And again, and if you think about the Giants, that probably means that Tom Green, maybe Toby Green, Finn Callahan, those guys are really sort of, you know, controlling the middle. Yep. And it's allowed Josh Kelly to sort of provide that... The class on the outside, so he's an interesting
one.
Which
is what he really kind of, you know, made his name for a few years
ago. The Rolls-Royce, right? Using the ball use outside. Yeah. Cam Zerha's an interesting one. I think this might be more symptomatic of North Melbourne.
This is one that I would look at and sort of, again, you'd need to dive deeper into the numbers because Cam Zerha as a forward is negative 0.66 rating points per 100 minutes. Yeah. Not too bad for as a North Melbourne forward that's seeing not much of the ball. Because it is. It's comparing you to the rest of the competition. And again... You talk about where we come from 6 years. The reason why these numbers are so good is now we're up to, I think, 13 years worth of data. So we're comparing him to 13 years worth of other sort of, you know, players that have played similar positions. So negative 0.6 rating points per 100 minutes to four, not too bad. But plus 3.56 as a midfielder, which you think, wow, we've got to throw him in there. But exactly, I think it's the ability for him to go in there and play 5 or 10 minutes that maybe when he hits the 12 to 15 minute mark of
a wall
in the midfield.
You can't do it. And so that became another thought I had with players who... You know,
the coaches have their role right, basically.
But players that might not spend an awful lot of time on the ground, forget position. So you're coming on for, if you're playing 80 minutes as opposed to 100 minutes, are you going to be that extra burst of coming back on and you don't have the fatigue factor as much? Are you going to be able to give more? If you said to Marcus Bontempelli, right, we're going to take 20 minutes off your game, but when you're on the ground, just give it that extra 5-10%. I mean, would his number jump? So I think that's another part of it as well.
So we need to keep moving through, but there are some great names here. So Rory Lobb obviously probably plays predominantly forward at the moment. So minus 2.10 rating points per 100 minutes played above below the average. When he has to play in the ruck, plus 1.98. So that's kind of interesting. Chad Warner, better as a forward, apparently, but quite comfortably by 4 rating points per 100 minutes. Petrarca, we mentioned. There's a few other names here, so like Mark Blitzars as a midfielder, pretty average, sort of that.
These numbers are from last year, right?
Yeah, since 2023.
And then Blitzars as a ruck is actually above that, so you see 2.10 above that expectation. So, I mean, look, there's some really interesting ones. We could also go the other way as well, and there are players who are
I've been tried in other positions, but yeah.
And it hasn't worked.
And, yeah, probably hasn't worked as much. So on top of that list is someone like Levi Casbolt, who again, probably, he is a forward. He's negative 2.55 rating points per 100 minutes of forward. So below below where he should be, but you know, not too bad. But negative 9.32 when he's thrown into the ruck. So usually put in there because of necessity, or you're the tallest
Dimmer
out there.
Let's, don't do it.
Yeah, let's just get Casbolt in there because he's the tallest, but clearly doesn't go well there. Stiff. Caleb Daniels, an interesting one. Again, because it's based on last year, his two positions on this spreadsheet are forward and mid. We know Caleb Daniel as being a 5-6 year vet behind the ball as a general defender. Comparing his main two positions last year, though, when he played as a forward, plus 2.76 rating points per 100 minutes. When he plays as a midfielder, negative 3.4 rating
points. That's surprising.
Good but news, again, I guess going inside 50 probably racks up a few rating
and again,
points.
And again, I feel like that's what Caleb Daniel is. He's a flanker. And without, you know, that shouldn't be sort of seen as a dirty word just because he's not an inside ball or an inside midfield. He's better when he's coming either from behind the ball, what he did as a general defender. And it goes back to his junior stuff as a small forward at the under 18 champs. I think about 70% of what he touched turned to a score for South Australia the year that he played, which is one of the best championship series.
I still think he's the best 20 to 25 metre kick going round.
Yeah, so he makes stuff happen. Nick Martin's another interesting one just quickly because he sort of was on the wing last year, was plus 4.56,
which is very
high. Winger. They threw him forward and he was negative 0.37. Mm-hmm. Now there's a big, you know, they're raving on about him moving to half back this year. So it'll be interesting to keep an eye on his number. And again, we'll be able to extrapolate, we'll be able to sort of combine 2023 and 2024. And we'll be able to compare Nick Martin to wing, forward and general defender by 4 weeks into the season and really get a feel for, have they, you know, do they need to put him back on the wing or can he play in a secondary?
And so we talked about Sinclair before and how his rating rating points per 100 minutes, like above the average, was quite high as a back. Yep. So 7.16. But then you go, oh, well, he's so much less when he gets thrown through the midfield, but he's still very much above average when you talk about midfielders.
So we spoke about Petrarca being plus 3.3, which is quite good for a midfielder. Jack Sinclair is plus 3.55. So
still excellent midfield.
Jack Sinclair's a better midfielder than Christian Petrarca?
Per 100 minutes, he's getting more value. That's how this... For 2023...
He baited him, but he was happy to play.
Well, that's what the numbers will say, So for 2023, per 100 minutes time spent in the midfield, saying. Jack Sinclair had more impact per 100 minutes.
Well, there's the title of the
And there were only a handful that would be higher than Sinclair.
Yeah. But again, that was probably me looking before I put the 300-minute qualifier on. So I reckon he'd be even less. But again, that... Looking at it overall, you break it down to one number, the best overall rating, and it is Jack Sinclair, number one. So if you compare what he's producing per 100 minutes in whatever position he's playing, he's always plus 5.9 points, rating points higher than what he should be getting no matter where he plays.
Followed by Bontepelli.
So he's number one, Bontepelli second at plus 5.47. Dan Houston third. Taylor Walker fourth. So here's an interesting one. Mm. If you just go raw rating points, he's equal with Charlie Curnow, but he played 8 fewer minutes per game than Charlie Curnow and basically produced the same results.
Makes sense,
comes up the per 100 minutes. Nick Blakey and Zach Butters. So you can sort of see there, Sinclair, Houston, Blakey. It really likes those attacking
defenders.
Guys that take the game on. But again, as a coach, you ask him and everyone wants one of those guys in their team. So they're your best overall playing. But then you can also just look at who is the best player in a certain position. And again, it's Jack Sinclair again. So whether this ends up being the Jack Sinclair ratings or something, but we spoke about his general defender rating per 100 minutes plus 7.2 rating points per 100 minutes as a general defender. That's the best of anyone that's played at least 300 minutes in a position. And then Petrarca as a forward, the plus 7% that we're talking about, that's the second best. And Errol Goulden, who actually played 326 minutes as a forward
just
last year, plus 6.7, which is the third best. So Errol Goulden as a forward is the third best player in the competition.
Just off the top of your head, is this something that can really help you when you're looking at super coach kind of players as well? This sort of stuff where you look at a secondary position and if you can get bargains like this?
If you know that, I would look at this for, if you're looking for super coach, probably thinking, if you know that Levi Casbolt's going to play ruck this week. We know that they don't have wits or anything, so it's like, all right, let's avoid Casbolt. Or it's the other way where it's Petrarca is clearly not going to play forward because they've picked... So, you know, again, you're not going to change Petrarca. He's good in either position, but it's more about when, if you know that someone's going to have to fulfill a different role coming up forward, you can have a look at this and sort of go, okay, is he going to go well in that position?
Interesting stuff. The Harvard X ratings.
Have to do a lot more throughout the year, I think.
I think so. Where are we expecting to see this, just as a general rule? On TV, radio, do clubs use this kind of stuff?
Yeah, so I know we, Chevy Data, had a segment on SEN radio last year where Daniel Hoyne was using it. And again, just the way the media works, I think talent works on SEN, that works on Fox as well. So whether they take it to Fox and start using it there, and whether
there you go. Keep an eye on it.
Yeah, whether it ends up on Channel 7. But yeah, it'll find its way around the industry, I'm sure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Our footy season is drawing closer, which means the content is starting to come out, Jake.
And, yes.
It's starting to get very busy on the website, espn.com.au/AFL.
Always busy, but footy now, which is good.
We kicked things off, on Friday, but on Monday we released your best 50 players in the AFL column, which, as we found out last year, it's a thankless task, firstly.
Well, it is.
It's a draining task. Mm-hmm. And I think, as we said in the opener, there's always robust feedback given.
There is. So far, from what I've seen this year, it's a lot less harsh and critical, I must say, which is good.
Were you preparing for the worst?
Yeah, I think you have to. Whenever you're putting an opinion down, something like that. The thing I always say is you can get every footy fan in the country to do that, to come up with their 50. You will not get two that are exactly the same order, let alone the 50 players. The order as well is just nuts. So you've got to think about it. I'm all for people saying this player shouldn't be there, this player should, higher or whatever. But try it. Like, honestly, try doing it yourself and see how you go, because it's an extremely difficult task.
If you think about it, so there's probably around 800 players in the league.
800 players.
Maybe
so you're looking
less.
At top 6, top 7% of players. So when you miss some, when someone doesn't get on,
18 times people, 3, that's 56. So if you're not in the top 3 players at your club,
yeah.
You
and
can't
obviously
really
some
be.
Clubs are going to have 5-6 players. So, yeah. So I think there's a general feeling that if you're not on this 50, you're no good. Well, you could be in the 7th or 8th sort of percent, that sort of range, and you don't get on.
Yeah. And there will be a few on the stiff list. Do you have a few off the top of your head that didn't make it? Spoilers alert. Of course, you can read this online.
Yeah, I mean, players that didn't make it.
It's free and not behind a paywall.
Yes, which is always good. So we got, a few players from, notable players from last year. Lachie Whitfield didn't make it.
Missed out.
Ben King didn't make it. Tim Kelly didn't make it. Josh Kelly didn't make it.
Dacos didn't make it.
Isaac Rankin didn't make it. Josh Dacos.
Jeez. Probably the best and fairest didn't
Hugh
make
McCluggage.
It.
Hugh
McCluggage. Zach Bailey.
And these are the kind of the ilk of players you're talking about, and you go, these are good players. These are top 100 players. But
then to the point, you go and read the 50 and you think, okay, who are you taking out?
Yeah.
You've got to take someone out. You can't pick
for instance,
75
who are you,
players
who's your
in the top 50.
50, 49th and 48th off the top of your head.
So Max King was 50.
Yep.
Dan Houston, 49, who we just heard
about,
is a very good footballer. Jacob Wiedering, 48, Andy Brayshaw, 47, Stephen Kinnear, 46. So you kind of see where you're going. And I guess you got Kinnear and Brayshaw as the end sort of midfielders. And then you're looking at players like Tim Taranto, just missed out. You've got to drop one of these guys out to put somebody in. Very difficult task.
Yeah. Well, if you think that's difficult, I guess coming up with a top 10 is equally as difficult,
well,
right?
Believe it or not, the top 10 actually, top 20 is probably the easiest part of it.
Oh, we were arguing and
you might,
pontificating for a while over the order.
So the order might be a little tricky, but I think in general, if you got everyone to do their own top 20, I reckon you're getting 15, 16 of the same name every single time. It's when you're getting down like 35 to 50, you can throw a blanket over a lot of different players, so it gets tough. The top 10 for me was pretty well set from when I first started out doing this, and it didn't really change too much.
Okay.
So, shall I run through it?
Oh, spoiler alert, if you want to read the yarn first, feel free to do that. Pause this and go and have a look. But
no one's going to do that. They're listening now.
Who knows? Go ahead.
It all started at 10. So, 10 was James Sicily. I won't give any sort of detail about it. You can read that online, but I'll just give the list. So, 10, James Sicily. 9, Clayton Oliver. 8.
No, I think we should have a little bit of a chat about it. I mean, Sicily's probably, I mean, we kind of looked at this on the pod last year when Hawthorn had him in the side, and then when he missed from the side, and just how much they sort of fell apart, and how structurally important he is. And
yep.
So I know that you're not, you know, the top 50 is not the most valuable players, but
he is one of the most valuable players to his team. Sorry, I thought we were going to press through this. That's all good. I'm more than happy to talk about it. Yeah, I think he's one of the most valuable players in the true sense of what that award or title would mean. He is extremely valuable, and like you said, he missed four games last year through those two suspensions, and the Hawks, I think they lost all four games by an average of about 49 points per game. They were a completely different side. Not that they were world beaters when he was in there, but they did cause two of the biggest upsets of the year and just were a better team. Mm. He is a phenomenal defender, one-on-one, reads the play well. He can intercept. He launches a lot of their attacks. He, in my opinion, is the number one defender in the AFL right now.
Clayton Oliver was ninth. And I think this is... It's so hard to know and gauge and judge.
Yeah. Tough
because... We know what he's been able to do, but what he'll be able to do this year, we're not quite sure. But as you've kind of said, it's leading into this season that you're judging these guys, and he's clearly been a top 10 player for numerous years.
Oh, he has been. I mean, he was a top 10 player not too long after he entered the league. What he did, I think people overlook how good he was so early, Clayton Oliver. And I say with his entry in the piece, it's he was probably the toughest player to rank out of all 50 because
he was third last year.
Yeah, so. I truly believe, I think you got to go one or two ways. You got to keep him as where you think he is, or he falls off completely because there's so many unknowns. I'm happy to back him in. If you're telling me he's playing the full year, he's going to be one of the 10 best players. I'm pretty confident in that. We know what he does for the Ds.
Well, fingers crossed he can get healthy in mind and in body as well and play some good footy because I think he needs... That's what's best for him and what's best for the club. So Moving further down, a bit of a controversial one, I think. Patrick Cripps at 8, top 10
didn't
still.
Think this would be. So something else, a little bit of a caveat with this whole exercise is I look at the last 2 years. I think 2 years is a nice window. Looking at one, there's a lot of recency bias if you just got
so
one.
So we're taking
season.
Into account his Brownlow.
So you're taking into account the last, it's not an exact science of game every single game, but it gives you a bit of a bit more of a scope on a body of work. So looking at the last 2 years, you've got him... As you said, that his Brownlow year, the best year of his career. Then you had last year, which a lot of people thought was a down year. But anything that, if you go from Brownlow year to not winning a Brownlow, by definition, it's a down year. He still finished top 10 in the medal.
And top three for generating scores from clearances, which is what Cripps did at his best. That's sort of the extract he had and getting it on the scoreboard. So he's still, I think his role was underappreciated last year.
I think so. And I think he's still one of the most dominant players on their day in the entire league. I mean, he puts that Superman cape on, and like you can't stop him.
Yeah, number seven. This is a man who was unranked last year, so coming with a bullet, really.
Yeah, I mean, it just Nick Dacos goes without saying, phenomenal rise. He will be the number one player on this list in short order, I would imagine.
Wow.
And if this was a list of players you'd want for the next 10 years. He's number one already. Yep. There's no doubt about it.
Well, if he played every game, he would have won the Brownlow last
Probably,
week.
You would say. Yep. So I've got him seventh. I still think, obviously, that there are six players better than him going into this season.
Yeah.
But as I said, it won't be long before he's top of these.
Some of the stats that surround Dacos, especially just through two seasons, are quite amazing. I think you've given here to Jake that he's won more disposals through his first 47 games than any other player on record.
Yeah,
it just goes to show how much of a ball maker he is.
And when we joke about it, that was 50% of his career is played out of general defence and behind the ball, so he's done it a different way. So, it's exciting to think of what this guy could be if he actually gets forward of the ball and has a season as a mid-forward.
Mm.
We sort of speak about the office, you know, there hasn't been many players whether it's been done before, to have 30 disposals in a game and kick 40 goals in a season. This guy could be one of the first if he is given that license to play as that mid-forward.
Justify this for me though, Jake, the man who did win the Brownlow last year, not in the top five best players. Is that not by definition he's the best player?
Well, you'd think so, especially because I love the award so much and
you
love the player.
Lockie,
yes.
Yeah.
He was six, so he dropped a few spots as well. But again, I don't think anyone's going to debate the top five ahead, and say that he's definitively better than...
Don't speak too soon.
People love to crap on the Brownlow anyway and say it's a midfielder's award, just rewards stats and all that stuff. So, Lachie Neale, gun player. We know what he's going to do. Had a phenomenal year. Obviously, there was a little bit of... people didn't think he probably deserved the Brownlow, but he probably should have won it the year before, so it all evens out. What he's done at Brisbane in his 5-6 years now,
yeah.
Is just extraordinary.
That
really.
Resume's unreal.
It's a Hall of Fame resume
at one at club Brisbane, in within a 5
forgetting
year
what he's done. Yeah. Forgetting what's done. He's a premiership away, and it feels a long way away now. But you know, you go back to the 5 minutes ago in that grand final, how close it was.
Mm.
What would we be saying about Lachie Neale if he was a premiership off, captain, yeah. Two Brownlows, co-captain? But you know what I mean.
It's a great question. One of the great what ifs. But you know, he's still time. This is the thing. I think the Lions' window is well and truly still open.
Top number five.
Yeah, let's whip through this a bit quicker. I gave you a bit of a license.
See, top five. Jeremy Cameron. I think for quite a while he was seen as the no doubt number one key forward in the league. Well, he has been surpassed, spoiler alert, but still top five player. He was on track for the 100 goals through the first quarter of last season. And, you know,
people got excited about that.
But they got excited. He tailed off a bit with injuries and a little bit of form, and the Cats struggled a little bit. You're going to be surprised if he comes back this year and boots 80? I don't think anyone will be. So he's five. Christian Petrarca at four, another player we just spoke about, can play in the middle, can play forward. And you just can't stop him wherever he is on the ground. I think he's yet again another massive chance to win the Brownlow. Number three is the guy that is the player that has overtaken Cameron, Charlie Curnow. I think he is now the best key position player in the league and certainly best key forward. I don't think it's really up for debate. He's won the last two Coleman medals. He's kicked, I think, 25 goals.
Question mark is that he can't quite produce on the biggest stage against the best teams.
Yeah, so there's two things. So didn't fire in finals. Mm. Didn't have none of his finals were that crash hot of the three. But even through the home and away season, his best games were against the poor sides, and his worst games were against the good side. So that's everyone's got something to work on. That's his thing, and that's probably what takes Carlton to the next level.
What are the two men above him got to work on?
Number two, Marcus Bontempelli. Well, he's got to work on winning in one of those Brownlows. Like I said, he's finished runner-up twice. I think a lot of people would...
It's too soon, isn't it?
I think a lot of people would say he is the number one player in the comp. He can do it all. Doesn't really have a flaw to his game. Kicks goals. Dominates in the midfield. But the guy I've gone as number one is Toby Green. I think what he did last year was one of the great seasons.
Yep.
Like, period. I think what he was able to do... Taking the captaincy, yep. There were question marks on that side of his game. He took his actual game on field to another level, kicked 66 goals for the year, I think it was, in the end. You know, this is a guy that's kicked... I think we overlook the fact that someone that's kicked 60 goals in a season, in this day and age too, we're not talking about when it was commonplace to kick 60 goals in a season, to kick 60, but he's also someone who we know in his first couple of years was averaging 28, 29 disposals a game.
Yeah.
He is the ultimate footballer, can do it any which way. The IQ is just insane. And as is the whole crux of this piece, going into this year, you tell me I can pick anyone for the whole year to play fully fit, fully healthy, and you get them for every game. He's my first pick.
Any qualms, Christian?
No, I think it was quite good. Again,
You two collaborate on this quite
exactly. I got a good early look, so happy that you got Harris Andrews in there finally. But no,
just floating around. It's hard that 30-70. You're just forever changing. I would work on it until 11 o'clock at night, be happy with it, go to bed, wake up, come back to it, and change 20 names around again. And you could just keep doing it forever.
But I do like the Toby Green. Again, this goes back to the Gary Ablett theory that I always had. So when, Gary Ablett versus Lance Franklin, if you just put them in both in a room and say, one of these guys is good at sport, which one is it? Are you going to pick Lance Franklin and go, well, he's an athlete. Much better. Yeah. But because we'll get what Gary Ablett produced, he became the number one player. Bontempelli, Toby Green, I think it's the same sort of thing. You can't split them as players, but you look at Toby Green and the package he comes in, it's like so unexpected of how good this guy can be for how much he dominates in the air and things like that. So... Again, you're splitting hairs between those two, but I think it's just that the Toby Green package actually makes it more special what he's been able to do.
Just on Neale again and being sixth, having five players finishing ahead of him, winning the Brownlow. Three of the players ahead of him are ineligible to win the Brownlow because they're forwards. So take them off. So there's really only two. And it's Bontempelli and Petrarca. And I think those two are the guys that... I understand.
Yes.
I don't think there's anybody that is going to take Lachie Neale over Bon or Petrarca.
Jake has said that he is very open to receiving feedback on this. On the proviso that you do your own top 50 and submit it to him before you have a crack at him on Twitter, @JMichaelsESPN.
And or if you say, how can X not be on the list, tell me who you're taking out. Or if you, you know, people say, give me five names, we'll take five out.
Them's fighting words. All right, well, we might as well go on the record while we are still here and talk about our pre-season predictions and who we think will win the flag, who will be runner-up, Wooden Spoon, Rising Star, biggest rises, biggest sliders. We'll do it all. Why not? Krishna, I might start with you because I like listening to yours before I decide on mine.
Well,
can't copy.
Yeah.
Look over my shoulder.
Pre-season predictions.
You would have been a bad student.
Let's keep these... no, not at all. let's keep these relatively brief, but a premier.
I've gone Brisbane.
So have I.
Yeah. Again, I struggle with these in terms of you're always thinking about last year. Like, nothing's changed in the off-season too drastically in terms of list-wise and things like that. But, yeah, I think they can take the next step this year.
Yeah, I don't think they're done. They're not on the way down yet. So I think the Lions, sometimes you need a bit of luck in finals. I mean, you talk about that last sort of minute and a half and the free kick that, if it goes the other way, you just don't know. So I think it's just going to be a reverse of last year. So my premier is Brisbane and my runner-up is Collingwood.
I'm on the Blues.
To win it?
Yep. I think Carlton is...
Had the experience in finals now.
Yeah. Had enough experience. They had that roller coaster season where things started pretty well, just went horrific for 9 weeks. And then we're able to get on that run and prove that they can win game after game after game. And the emotions through finals, I think there were other players that took their games to new levels. I think Cripps will be better this year. As I said, Sam Walsh was phenomenal in finals, the player of the finals.
Mm.
To, you know, Charlie we spoke about. Harry Mackay was someone who wasn't on my 50. Massive wild card and a player that I don't think anyone's going to be... He could easily kick 60 goals and no one's going to be surprised if he's a consensus top 30 player by the end of the year again. So, and then the defence as well has come on in leaps and bounds. I think Carlton is primed and the midfield is going to be what drives it. So
Who are they beating?
They're beating Brisbane. So I've also got Brisbane.
So they're avoiding them in the prelim, avoiding a trip to the Gabba.
Going
to
avoid them and but the key, Brisbane's going to Brisbane gonna fall again in the... grand final and probably lead to a few changes.
While I got you, your biggest riser?
Biggest riser, Suns.
Suns. Yeah. You're backing him. You're backing Dimmer.
I
80%
am.
Of the flag
it's,
list.
It's not so much that I'm backing Dimmer and it's not so much that I think that I agree with that comment, but I think it's time.
The list
is
ready.
I think the list is in a good spot in terms of the age profile, the players that they've got.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen another midfield where you see, we know how good Miller and Anderson and Rowler and Witts, and we saw the emergence of Flanders last year. I think there's just enough now. The depth was always the issue.
Well, the consistency as well was an issue.
Yeah.
But you think that another year of experience irons that out as well. And you know, when you do bring in someone, a coach who does have relatively recent experience of getting to the top, they can bring something. I know that it's a bit of a cliche that you bring in a premiership winning coach, but there must be something there that he can offer these players.
Well, I think even forgetting tactically and all that stuff, what he brings to the Suns, I think it's just as much a boost for the players thinking, this guy wants to coach. This guy obviously is on a good pay packet, but he's taken this job. Like he's not going to go there if he thinks they're garbage and he's going to get sacked in 3 years' time.
That's fair enough. Who's rising for you?
Adelaide, who will be part of my big call. So
I can hold on to that one. I think the Dogs. I think the Dogs get back up into the top four.
Dogs.
They just have to, don't they? There's talent on that list.
Yeah, there's talent on every list.
I know there's talent on every list, but I look at that team and I think they need to be better than what they are.
The Bulldogs are a Bont injury away from being a bottom four side.
That's a big call. Is that your big call?
That's not my big call, but I don't think that's that outrageous.
You've got a forward line that's starting to come of age now.
Yeah, but who's going to get them the ball?
Libera and McRae and Bailey Smith out for the year.
Best inside midfielder of last year, but they're an injury.
Tom Liberatore is, but Bailey Smith's gone. Well, he's not playing, and McRae's fallen off a cliff. Himself.
Yeah, I think that was, and again, look at the 100X type thing. That was the role he was playing. I agree with you. They lose Bonds and Pally, they're not making finals. Yeah. So I would stick with you.
Whip through these. We keep getting caught up. Who's sliding?
Sliding, Dons. I don't think
from 10th.
Yeah, I think they're going to be bottom. I think they will be a bottom four, bottom five side. I don't think there's going to be a team that's going to have a drastic drop, but I think the Bombers are the team that I'm concerned about. Essendon and Richmond, I think, just not very confident on what they can do this year.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the teams aren't going to drop heaps. I don't think there's going to be a massive drop.
Well, I've got my biggest slide is Sydney, but I also put the classic, the quantifier next to it that I don't think any team will drop by more than four spots. So if you're calling a big slider, yeah, you know, someone to drop four spots, that might
three
be the Swans.
Is, yeah. I think Freo into the bottom four.
Okay. I'm surprised no one said St Kilda.
I just can't.
In sixth last year?
Yeah. Do they make finals? Not for you, obviously.
Do they make finals this year? Oh, no.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. Spoon? West Coast?
Oh, I thought you meant the St Kilda Spoon. hard for it not to be the Eagles. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I mean, I think West Coast and North are both going to show more than they did last year. But they're still the step below, and I think it'll be a battle out of those two.
I think we won't be having discussions about, you know, is it the worst side since Fitzroy, but they'll still be.
Oh, I mean, I'm sure they'll lose a game by 152 points.
Sure, Fitzroy will be brought up once this year.
Yeah,
that's a big call. Brownlow, I think Nick Daicos, if he stays healthy, we saw what he could have done last year, and I think that he gets it done.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm going to go this guy for the first time I'm ever picking him, Bont. Oh. I think it's time. I mean, it's not a.
But he's one injury away from the.
Yeah, but he also shows how good he is. I mean, I spoke about him before. He's a phenomenal player, and it's something that's missing from his resume right now. Really, I mean, I think most people would comfortably say he's one of the best players modern era to not win one.
Not a play on the umpires' minds. Geez, Bont hasn't got one. Oh, two or three. I'll give him three.
I don't know. I would hope not.
Because you've got the theory about whoever gets interviewed on the ground afterwards.
Well, it's not. It's more so they're interviewing a player. There's just going to be a little bit. The umpire's walking off, just sort of glance over.
The last player he says.
Yeah. I was going to give him a one.
Brownlow?
Tom Green, GWS.
Well, I like that call.
Was my one. So, yeah. Again, it might not be this year, but I can guarantee he'll have one in the next four or five, you would have thought.
And the Coleman, I think we're all in agreement on the Coleman medal winner.
I know. I thought I was going slightly left field. But
I thought I was too. But
I've gone Nick Larkey, and it appears we've all gone the big suit.
He nails his chances. He's a really good kick for goal.
And I think he'll get a bit more.
Yeah, he'll get a bit more.
Even if they're only 10% better in the midfield, that's... And that's where, again, he's getting most of those extra opportunities.
And that's what I've looked at. When a very, very quick look at North is they've really stacked their mid. You know, they're going to get better in the midfield, so they're going to get more ball. There's no one up forward that's going to take.
No.
Like, it's not like Callum Coleman-Jones is going to get more games and become the focal point. So, like, well, Nick Larkey's still got that forward line to himself, and he's got a better midfield delivery.
Especially if big Cam Zuha goes into the midfield and is plus 0.36 points per 100 minutes.
Bangs him in.
On a similar vein, my rising star is actually George Wardlaw, who might be delivering it to him. So I think that he'll get enough opportunities and he'll be the rising star.
I just can't see it being anyone other than Harley Reid. I mean, obvious choice again, but if he plays the full season, if he doesn't get injured, he's the rising star. I think that's an absolute no-brainer.
I only reason I didn't put Wardlaw is because of the body and whether he can play the 22 games. I don't think, I don't know, probably more of a hope. I'm not sold that it will be Harley Reid if he's going to play that half-back role.
You just know they're going to want to give him the award, no matter what.
There's a fair few guys, and again, they're not huge names, like someone like Angus Sheldrick, and we just spoke about the guys that are going to be put into the gut straight away. So that's who I've sort of gone for. I thought Wardlaw definitely for me, just whether he can get through the whole season. So I've gone Elijah Chardis from Essendon. Mm. So again, an inside ball winner, 25 disposals, 7 clearances per game as a junior, no pre-season last year, missed the first half of the year, came back and averaged exact same numbers in the VFL, in his final 8 games in the VFL. So he's going to get that role where if Essendon does get to 7th and 8th and he's played at 80% of their centre bounces, I feel like that's going to just sort of attract more votes from the voting panel.
All right, finally, your big call for the year.
Christian.
Oh, okay, well, I've gone. We'll witness the first showdown prelim. So not only have I got Adelaide going up that high, I've got them.
So you've also got Port staying up there.
I've got Port and Adelaide both in the final four, and hopefully they meet off.
Who wins it?
Be bigger than... Gathering.
Bigger than Gallo, about to say the same thing. I've got Port Adelaide being my runner-up, so I've got Port Adelaide making it to the grand final.
Oh, yeah, did we go through that?
I think I missed that one. But,
first podcast
again,
back.
Port Adelaide's runner-up, that goes against all of what the stats say in terms of, we spoke about their defence is just not there yet, but that's what they've recruited for.
Exactly.
So I've put my hat on something, I'm going on something I haven't seen yet, but I feel like they're going to fix their problem and hopefully their strengths just stay. So.
Big call.
Did debate Port as my slider, but no, I rate that. Well, I had a big call, so I thought... My big call was Tom Green was going to finish top three in the Brownlow.
He's going to win it.
Then Christian said he's going to win. And I said, well, like, that can't be my big call now. So I've had to go with something else that I've been saying quite a bit in the off-season. And it's Rowan Marshall. And it goes against everything I say about Ruckman. Mm. But I love Rowan Marshall.
We should insert some clips of you talking crap about Ruckman, but we won't.
He will. So there's kind of two passes. He will finish the year as a no-doubt undisputed top 10 player in the league. which obviously will mean a couple of things. He'll be the All-Australian
ruck. We'll have to overtake players
and,
like Max Gorn.
And it won't be... It won't. It'll get to the end of the year. It won't really be a debate. It'll be pretty well clear. It's Marshall's spot.
But you had the Saints sliding.
And sorry.
But you had the Saints sliding.
No, I don't have the Saints. Well, I don't have. They weren't my slider.
Oh, okay. But no. You have them sliding. You said that
they
before.
They can slide. They can slide.
You're not making finals.
No, I don't think. I don't think they will. I don't think they will.
We've got the best defender. We've just been praising.
It doesn't matter. Bond last year nearly won the Brownlow. The Dogs didn't play finals.
Sure.
So. Yeah, Marshall, and the other part of it is, I think he'll poll 18 to 20 Brownlow votes this season. I think he's that good. That important, wins so much ball, tackles, clearances, inside 50s, contested ball, uncontested ball. He kind of does everything, and he does everything pretty well.
Not your traditional ruckman.
I'm big on him. Yeah. I think he can be a star.
Mine is, North is going to win 8 games this year, but they're still going to finish in the bottom 4. I just think that they have... enough
games?
Pluck, and they'll snag a few. They might get a team down in Hobart and just jag one here or there. And I just think that they'll win. It's kind of like Hawthorn a couple of years ago, where
Hawthorn
they won 7
year.
Or 8. Yeah, the last but couple of years. You go, oh, that's not too bad, but they still finish in the bottom 4. I think Fremantle might slide a bit more, and then you talk about Richmond, Essendon.
Who was 15th last year?
We think the gap is tightening, right? So maybe the gap's going to tighten a bit.
Who was 15th last year? I feel like 8 wins is a lot to finish bottom 4.
Is it?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Seven right? I think Hawthorn... what's the...
I don't know. Gold Coast won 9 last year. They were 4th.
I was going to say 28, 32 points is good bottom of the ladder.
So I think you still have...
Not the biggest call. I would have preferred if you went 10 wins, but...
And still finishing the bottom...
Well,
just 10
just
wins overall.
Go a bit,
I think 8's pretty
just back
big.
Them in.
No.
Eight, so they're going to go from 3
it's
to
a gargantuan
8.
Gargantuan call.
Okay.
It's not Zach Butler's going to win the Brownlow. What was it? Brownlow Rising Star.
North. So your call is essentially North Melbourne will rise from 17th to 15th. Okay, that's a massive call.
Come on now. Very good. Hey, some new rules have come in this year as well. We will just really whip through these. The sub's going to continue, but they're going to be named a bit earlier. So they're going to be named from an extended interchange instead of having the emergencies and then naming a sub. So a bit more clarity about who's going to be playing on game day a little bit earlier, which is nice. They'll still be named only an hour out from...
Chris Scott went like that.
the old late change. Smothers and Runtown tackles are going to be more heavily scrutinised, probably obviously in the wake of the Gus Brayshaw and the Maynard collision. Probably a good thing, I think.
I think everyone's pretty happy with that.
Yeah, the AFL needed to make that change really quickly, and I'm kind of glad to see they have.
Yep.
Even though, obviously... hindsight, a wonderful thing. You would have liked that to have been implemented at the start of last year, but it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be a change in interpretation of the laws of the game to permit straight arm blocks in a ruck contest. So no more of the, you blocked him out of the ruck contest, the stronger ruckman giving away a free kick.
I can't tell if you like that or dislike
Love that.
That. Okay.
I questioned this rule when it came out because I haven't seen the full... So the ruling of the ruck is you have to allow the other ruckman to compete for the ball.
Yes.
But then they've brought in this one. So whether we're going to end up with, you're allowed to stiff arm him, but you still have to let him compete for the ball. So
provided the
kick.
Player still contests the ball.
Yeah.
So if you can stiff arm, but then you're contesting the footy, so I guess it's kind
but
of...
But the you guy you're stiff arming has to be able to contest the footy as well, according to the wording of the rule. So I find this one could be
so
getting a little bit confusing. Because
stiff arm's not
but,
that
but
good.
But I really disliked when you, as a ruckman, got the good position, then tried to protect your own space, and then gave away a free kick. So I'm happy to see that that's been tweaked, and we'll see how it goes there.
Yep.
And here's the strangest one from the off-season. Whistling from an interchange bench. A minor amendment to the regulations has been introduced, prohibiting whistling from the interchange bench. This change is a result of excessive whistling from club officials.
So who's bothered by this?
Have you ever noticed it as a fan, in the media
certainly.
Box, on TV?
No.
Never?
Don't think I've ever noticed it.
Is someone imitating the umpire's whistle?
I think you notice it more. You notice it more if you would go down and watch a game of local footy. You're hearing more
back.
Stuff. I don't think you hear that in the AFL. Like, especially when you get crowd noise and commentary or whatever.
Whistling.
I've never noticed that.
So obviously, maybe an AFL exec or an AFL employee who's down on the bench is just, old mate just keeps
but
whistling.
It's not about it sounds too similar to the umpire.
No.
It's just an
maybe it's just
an annoyance.
Too much communication. I don't know. Maybe that's what the runners are for.
Yeah.
Who knows? Hey, usually at this time of the pod, we throw to something called red time as the clock ticks down on the episode.
We do.
But we did sort of say off the top that we have some exciting news, and it's that we're finally going to be doing 2 episodes a week.
Yes.
And we're going to call it Red Time because, well, that's what we call the segment, and it's just sort of easy, and it's within our, and we've got the graphics ready to go for that episode as well. So it kind of makes a lot of sense. But basically, it's going to come out every Thursday ahead of the weekend of footy. It's going to feature Jared Barker, so who has been in the host chair of this podcast.
Absolutely. He'll be,
a few times.
He'll be back in my seat next week as
and,
well.
And you'll be with him every week, and perhaps some guests to feature along the way. But first episode, next Thursday, that's March 7. What's the vibe? What are we going to be expecting from a Red Time?
We're going to be going through the hottest sort of topics in the sport and just a bit more, not rapid fire, but just shorter, sharper, getting through more topics and just sort of opinions on some of the biggest issues, biggest talking points, debates in the sport. Should be a lot of fun.
Excellent. So we've been campaigning for a while to get an extra episode per week. And we finally...
It's been a bit of a slog, but...
Yeah, the money has been unlocked and Disney has given us the key to the to the studio. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see this. Fellas, we should wrap things up there. It's been a great first episode. Great to be back in the studio with you. Great to be talking footy again.
It is good.
We'll be back next week, and you'll be back twice next week, as we just alluded to.
No, I'll be back once, as I just alluded to.
Oh, no, yes, of course, you're away.
I won't be.
He comes in for one episode.
He's already traded Red Time for this one.
He said he was going to go to Japan and run the marathon, and suddenly it's become a half marathon, and now it's like, oh, geez, will he run it all? So he's just swanning off to Japan to have some sushi and back in time at the start of the season.
I will. So, yes, I'll be back. I'll be back for game one. Of what I'm calling round one. I refuse to call it opening round. It's round one.
A whole nother can of worms.
But yeah, I'll be back for that. And with Red Time with Jared, so it should be fun.
It'll be good. It'll be good. Very much thank you to everyone at home for tuning in. Season 6, we're excited to get cracking into it. Thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you in the next one.
Thanks for joining us on the ESPN Footy Pod. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.